The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
And welcome into Market Talk here today. Thanks for joining us on the program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen. Great to have you with us as we got a busy show on tap for you here today. We got a WASDE report out for the month of April on Thursday. What impact did that have or did it not have on the markets? We're going to talk about that the second half of today's show here with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. So looking forward to that here on the program. First up, though, I'm not going to waste any time here on the show. We're going to talk about the expansion of soybean crush and a new report out from CoBank that is looking at some of the challenges that could be there with an overbuild. So let's dive in. Joining us here on Market Talk, pleased to welcome back Tanner Emke, lead grains and oilseeds economist at CoBank. Tanner, thanks for joining us on the show today. Hope you're doing well.
Likewise, Jesse. Thanks for having me back. It's always a good, always a pleasure to be here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this new report you guys just released here a few weeks ago. As we've continued to talk about this boom of renewable diesel and crush capacity and all these new plants that are coming online here across the country, and really just set this up for us, Tanner, as you guys kind of looked at some of the risks here of maybe going too far, so to speak, with some of our buildup. So can you give us just kind of a quick overview of what you guys found with this new report?
Yeah, well, we worked with our customers that are building in the space, and there's always been this talk about what you talk about, the risk of overbuild, because so many of us lived through the ethanol buildout back, it's a short time ago, but it seems like yesterday, but it's been over 15 years now, in the late 2000s, and everyone's calling this ethanol 2.0, mm-hmm. that we're going to see the same thing happen in soybean crush like we saw in ethanol, where the space was overbuilt. You had a lot of undisciplined capital come into the marketplace. Farmers didn't have deep enough pockets for some of the ethanol plants that they invested in. You had some outside money that is not accustomed to the swings in commodity markets that came in to invest in ethanol, and the space quickly got overbuilt. And we saw so many of those plants, unfortunately, get liquidated at pennies on the dollar. And now everyone is thinking that's exactly the same thing that's going to happen here with soybeans or with soybean crush. We have a similar, we think something similar may happen, but it's not going to be the same. First of all, the balance sheets of the folks that are building out the capacity in soybean crush are very, very strong, Jesse. After a couple years of record large, crush capacity, crush margins over the last couple of years, balance sheets are healthy. And we just don't see the likelihood of a correction happening this year or next year. On that note, I do want to point out crush margins have come back really in a big way over the over here this past year. And we have now come back to something that is closer to the historical norm. And so that inevitably is going to mean that that's going to have a negative impact on the ability for a new plant to cash flow. These new plants, remember, are built at a much higher cost than plants of in the past. The borrowing costs are significantly higher. The raw material costs for concrete, for steel, for aluminum, all those raw materials are sharply higher. You have labor costs are sharply higher. So to build a new plant today is no longer going to pencil at the low level at the crush margins that we had in the past. Mm-hmm. And so now the question is, okay, if you did build a new plant at these sharply higher costs, how long can you last at a crush margin that is now come back to earth. The crush margin of today is not what it was a year ago. And so that starts this question of, okay, who is going to be rationalized? What assets are going to be rationalized? We don't think that's going to happen here first in the United States. We do think it's going to happen, but we think it's going to first happen in Argentina. That's where you've got a lot of crush capacity that has been idled over the past year because Argentina had a terrible crop last year. Mm-hmm. And those crushers down there are struggling. At the same time, there's a new government down there in Argentina and is contemplating raising the export taxes on soybean product exports, specifically meal and oil. And that would be a terrible headwind for those crushers. So they are the ones that are the most vulnerable at this point in time. Okay. You're not going to see crush capacity idled in China. They're going to make sure that those plants where most of the soybeans are crushed in the world are going to remain operational. They want the beans and the meal and the oil and the jobs. We don't see Brazil coming offline anytime soon. Same thing there. Their balance sheets are strong. And of course, like I talked about here in the United States, our balance sheets are very strong. So the most vulnerable crushers really, Jesse, are down in Argentina. That doesn't mean we don't have risk.
Yeah.
There are some plants, as we point out in the paper, that we would be concerned about. It's going to be those plants that are called destination plants, the ones that are located outside of your main soybean growing regions that are going to rely on transportation to import soybeans to their local area. And that's another layer of cost, another layer of risk, because transportation costs can be volatile. They can rise on you. So there's another layer of risk there for destination plants. We're concerned about plants that are in areas that are experiencing some overbuild, where you're going to have crush capacity in a small area or a local area where you're going to have plants bidding against each other for soybeans. And then what happens if we're in a short soybean year and you have an export bid show up from China? All of these things now are going to be working against those plants that are already in competition with each other. And so their basis is going to be reflecting that. And their cost of soybeans is going to be much higher. That's an obvious win for the farmer. But for the crush plant, that's another layer of risk. And so we talk about that in the paper. Those are really, in the U.S., those are the two areas that we'd be concerned about. And, of course, management is important. What is the quality of the management? Who is the money behind the plant? Mm-hmm. Okay, are they disciplined capital? Do they understand the cycles that we experience in agriculture? Are they patient capital? Do they know that we have these boom and bust cycles? And during the bust cycles, are they ready to stand there firm and deep, reach into their pocket and pull out more money? You know, are they going to be there? How deep are the pockets and how deep is their patience, really, is the question, really. So those really are really the three things that we outlined in the paper is where are the plants located? What is their local competition for soybeans? And who is behind the plants? Are they disciplined capital and do they have the capital behind them to carry them through low margin periods?
All right. Well, that is Tanner Emke, lead grains and oilseeds economist with CoBank. We're going to continue this discussion coming up after the break here on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And welcome back to Market Talk. Thanks for joining us here on the program today. Of course, coming up, we are going to recap the Thursday release of the April WASDE report. Brian Doherty with Total Farm Marketing is going to join us for a deep dive and market analysis coming up here in the second half of our show today. Right now, though, we're continuing our conversation with Tanner Emke, lead grains and oilseeds economist at CoBank, talking about a new report looking at the expansion of soybean crush here in the U.S. and the potential of overbuild risks for some of the new plants that are out there. And Tanner, I want to pick up this conversation. There's one area that I don't think is maybe being talked about enough that I'd love your perspective on, and that is competition from imports of other vegetable oils. I think about palm oil, canola-based oils, et cetera, here as we look at this whole picture. You know, there's a lot of that world competition, I think, is out there as well that's not being talked about quite as much as maybe it needs to. What's your thoughts on that as we look at this big picture here?
We addressed that in the paper about the risk to the crush margin. You can, if you haven't been watching the news, we've got record imports. Vegetable imports of all kinds are flowing into the United States. Canola oil imports are record high, and Canada is building out their crush capacity to meet the rising demand for veg oils. And so we can anticipate more canola oil flowing in from Canada in the years ahead. Palm oil flowing into the United States at a record large amount to backfill the demand for veg oils in the United States that's left vacant by soybean oil. Palm oil is not supposed to be used for renewable diesel because it would contribute to the destruction of rainforests in Southeast Asia. But at any rate, those imports are record high and flowing into the U.S. Then you got used cooking oil, very controversial there, coming in from China. Is it actually used cooking oil, or is it just palm oil that they heated up and they're able to capture that credit by selling it to the United States as a processed or a used cooking oil? So those imports are record high, and that's competing with soybean oil processed here in the United States or crushed soybean oil created here in the United States, and that's depressing soybean oil prices, and that's going to be impacting the crush margin. And that's ultimately going to be flowing down to the processor bit in your local area. But right now, you know, as expansion continues to grow in the United States, there's a positive story here, I think, as renewable diesel demand continues to grow. That's going to put upward pressure on demand through this growth period for all veg oils, soybean oil included, and that's going to put a firmer floor under veg oil prices. That's the short-term view here. Remember, we're not the only country, Jesse, that has a renewable fuel program. Mm-hmm. You got Southeast Asia doing their own programs. You got Brazil doing their own programs. Other countries around the world are going to be pulling veg oils off the market. So over time, you're going to see that demand for veg oils continue to rise, not just here in the United States, but around the world. That's going to create scarcity, and that's going to create higher prices.
We're talking with Tanner Emke from CoBank, talking about the expansion of U.S. soybean processing capacity. And you can find the full report on the Knowledge Exchange from CoBank. Just go to CoBank.com. You know, another side of this as well, and I know that your colleague Brian Ernest talked about this in the report, the meal side of this equation as well as we expand crush. I know that's just that's another piece to this whole expansion puzzle that really overall it's going to be very interesting to see how all of this plays out. Really, you know, we've been talking about this expansion a couple of years now. It seems like we're just kind of on the cusp of really finding out what this is going to look like here through the rest of this year and into 2025. Right, Tanner?
Yeah, there's a lot to be written here on what's going on, especially with soybean meal. We've been talking about it, as you said, for quite some time. And Brian Ernest, our animal protein analyst, he put his thoughts in the paper about what this means for demand here in the United States. It's been talked about often with all this soybean meal coming onto the market. Obviously, there's a win here for anyone who's an end user of soybean meal in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see a significant increase in domestic usage then. If prices are going to go down for soybean meal, then obviously we would assume then the demand would go up because that's what prices, low prices do. It's going to create demand. Brian is not so optimistic on that. Yeah, we're going to continue to see demand go up, but in the short term here in the next couple of years, he doesn't see a material increase that's going to be taking a lot of that meal off the market. And so we're going to have to find a place for that meal in some other avenue. The first avenue is going to be into the export market. And we already talked about the risks to Argentina and some of their crush capacity coming offline. We're going to be in direct competition with Argentina and other countries for soybean exports, especially into that key Southeast Asian growth market. That's going to be important, sending meal into places like Malaysia and into the Philippines and Vietnam. Those are big growth markets. But here in the United States, there might be some other expansion opportunity that we just don't know about. Some innovative entrepreneur out there might find a use for that soybean meal that we don't know about, that just completely comes out of nowhere. Yeah, we're going to use soybean meal to put in to burn in a car or something. I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, someone's going to find out when something is in abundance and cheap, somebody's going to figure out something that we don't know about. Yeah. And so we always have to figure that out. But as it is right now, the animal usage and poultry usage of soybean meal is not going to be increasing enough to take it completely off the market. We've got to move it into the export market, and that's going to be a competitive market for a time. And so it's going to be really going to be have the one on price in order to compete, and that's going to be impacting the crush margin.
Tanner, I'm going to ask this final question. It might be a bit of a loaded crystal ball type question, but considering everything we have going right now with this boom for soybean crush expansion and more, you know, corn has been king in the U.S. for so long. Do you envision that soybeans could maybe take over the top spot from corn, so to speak, here for U.S. growers as we move forward with this? Or is it going to continue to be kind of just that neck and neck type of, you know, corn bean rotations that we typically have been seeing?
Well, this year we'll see that as indicated in the prospective plannings report, where I think most people had anticipated soybeans overtaking corn and other crops this year. Which is no surprise. The question is, does this play out in the years ahead? Remember, we talked about veg oil imports coming into the U.S., okay? Markets will be efficient. And to sit here and say soybeans will be the number one planted crop in the United States permanently, I'm not prepared to say that. I can't say that. I think that markets will be efficient. This year, soybeans will have an advantage over corn. I'm not prepared to say that that's going to happen next year, because as we expand soybean acreage, and if weather works out, obviously, and we have a big soybean crop, what happens to soybean prices? Markets will be efficient, Jesse. Yep. Prices will go down. And if we have a lot of corn acres disappear, what's going to happen to corn prices? Corn prices will go up. And that's going to send the market signal next year then for farmers to switch back and start adding more corn acres and replacing soybean acres. So I'm not in this camp that this is a permanent shift. I still think that the flow of imports of vegetable oils into the United States is going to alter this story somewhat. And of course, at the same time, farmers are going to continue to be innovative. Yields are going to continue to improve. Farmers don't want to abandon responsible crop rotations, crop rotations that are agronomically smart. So you're not going to see a wholesale increase over to soybeans. That's just not good on your soils. So there's a whole lot of factors here that really question this narrative that soybeans are going to be the new king. I'm just not on board with that idea yet.
Read the full report, Rapid Expansion of Soybean Crush Capacity Risks Exceeding Growth of Renewable Diesel, online at cobank.com under the Knowledge Exchange tab. Tanner Emke with CoBank. Appreciate the time. Anything final you want to mention or reiterate for folks here before we wrap it up today?
I'd say I hope our report offers a lot of questions to people or answers to people's questions, but always remember research is ongoing and there's a lot of questions unanswered and we're going to keep working on it.
Well, we appreciate the time and the insight. Again, read that full report online at cobank.com under the Knowledge Exchange tab. With that, Lee Grains and Oilseeds Economist with CoBank, Tanner Emke. Tanner, always good to chat with you, sir. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me, Jesse.
All right. Coming up next here on Market Talk, we got the release of the April WASDE report on Thursday. Any surprises? Any market impacts? We're going to talk about that with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing. He joins us next on Market Talk.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
Well, on Thursday, we had a WASDE report out from the USDA. The April numbers, mostly uneventful, but there's some things that maybe the USDA didn't say in that WASDE report out Thursday that are of note, and that's something we're going to talk about here today on the program. Joining us now for market analysis, Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. Brian, good to catch up with you, sir. Another report day is here, and largely kind of uneventful. It's almost kind of a boring day, which we kind of expected that with the April report, didn't we, Brian?
We did. That traditionally is not one of the bigger market movers. There just isn't a whole lot of new information to kind of, you know, for the report to grab its teeth into. There was some hope for a couple of things. One, that with the quarterly stocks number off, that we would see some support there maybe in projected carryout for corn, or that we would see maybe some reduction to the southern hemisphere crop with some private forecasts there, along with CONAB looking at some tighter numbers than the current USDA numbers. So those are things that, you know, when you look at big picture and kind of look at what came out today, it's really more of what didn't come out today. So kind of boring there. I'm going to hit some highlights for you. The average pre-report estimate for the Argentina corn crop was 55.3 million, came in at 55 million tons, and that's a million less than last month. There were some that thought maybe we'd be closer to 54, but that wasn't the case. Brazilian corn, 124, last month, 124. The market expectation, though, was for some downgrade, 122. We didn't see that this month, so it looks like the USDA is being reserved there. And then over in soybeans, same thing. Mark was looking for about 152 million metric tons. Private estimates have been down in the upper 140s, low 150s. Brazil number from the USDA today comes in unchanged from last month at 155 million metric tons. And then the Argentine crop, same as last month there as well. So it's what the report didn't say. It didn't bring those drawdowns in some of the South American crops.
There's some things that just weren't said, and one has to wonder when or if USDA is going to say that on upcoming reports. I mean, nothing there to feed the bull on the day Thursday. Grains outside of soybean meal all kind of just drifted moderately lower. I know this report from the Rosario Exchange about disease in the Argentine corn crop, that caught my attention Wednesday evening as I was looking through some headlines, but then, you know, nothing of note to that here this month. And then you get to the May report, I know, going to be coming up. We're going to get some of the new crop balance sheets factored in there. And I just, you know, I have to wonder, I guess, you know, USDA hasn't made a big adjustment at this point. Will they ever, Brian? I guess that's kind of the guessing game that the trade's going to have to think about here for the next month ahead.
Well, it is. And one of the things that, you know, I think it was AgriConsult several weeks back had indicated that that maybe the bean acreage would be higher. And so that might be why the USDA is a little bit hesitant until maybe there's a better perspective on acres. But yes, in Argentina, you know, the drawdown, and I don't want to butcher this, but the spiroplasma disease,
yep,
carried leafhoppers, you know, it's something new, something that hasn't really been measured. And so how do you measure it? I think the USDA, I'm going to say, proved last year that don't judge your crop too quick, because there were a lot of us, myself included, you just got to say it like it is, that were thinking the U.S. corn crop maybe in the low 170s on yield. And here it is, you know, November, we're adjusting upward, January, mm-hmm, adjusting upward. So I think maybe the USDA is going to be somewhat very pragmatic and slow to adjust with hybrids and whatnot. These, you know, in the current growing seasons, maybe a little bit more productive than what we're used to expecting.
Something on my mind here, you look at a fairly uneventful report day, and Brian, you are always good at giving us some real good, like, kind of that perspective, looking out the big picture here, you know, and this is something that I think, case in point, happened with the cattle trade last week and all the volatility there, but even with grains too, as we're getting busy with planting and things like that, there's sometimes I think that some producers tend to not pick up the phone in markets like this. They don't like looking at the price. They just like don't want to ask questions, things like that. But to that end, this isn't a time where you stop asking questions when it comes to your marketing plan. It's more a time to make sure you manage your risk, isn't it, Brian?
Well, this is a great topic, and sort of what I'm going to call right in our wheelhouse, or my wheelhouse, is that, you know, I'll start with sort of the very, very, very near-term picture. Every day the market opens up, and it's a new day, a new opportunity. So it either goes up or down from there. So you can start from that. Now, if we step back and look at the other end of the spectrum, you kind of look at the big picture and go, well, what's really happened over the last year, let's say, in the corn market? And the reality is Brazil, the United States, China all had record corn crops. So tough to, you know, build inventories and then expect high volatility in the market to raise higher. With all that being said, though, you kind of got to pay attention. You and I have been talking, we talked all year, we talked at the end of the new year, or I'm sorry, the end of the calendar into the new year. And I don't know if you remember, but our conversation at that time when corn was quite a bit higher in price was centered around the idea that the funds appear to be adding. The yield number went up in November. There doesn't appear to be much of a weather story in South America. And yet, you know, I'm going to say there was a lot of talk of, oh, the funds will balance the books at the end of the year. There'll be buyers. Or after the first day, the market needs to rally. You know, none of that. Those are just things to sort of delay making decisions, hoping that things go higher. And at that time, they were trending lower. So anyway, on the far end of the spectrum, not a lot of supply issues, and it's a little early for weather market. And I think the big picture perspective is the USDA reports don't hand you anything bullish, at least these reports, the stocks and acreage did. But you don't have anything bullish there, Jesse. And so it's just hard to get buyers to come in here and roar in here and say, I better buy. And that's just the reality of where we're at. So the point I'm getting at here is when we do have rallies, you know, pay close attention. That there have been years where we don't get much out of rallies, and we need to really look at those carefully.
And I'll even throw into that sentiment as well. I'm thinking, case in point, the cattle trade. You know, Monday, Tuesday, we had good days. Maybe, you know, some of the worry went away from all the volatility last week. And then, you know, Wednesday was a tough day. We gained some of that back Thursday. But, you know, just even a couple day rally, sometimes people think, oh, well, okay, things are looking okay. I can pause my decision making here. But then all it takes is one black swan, one move is what I'm trying to get at here that could really, you know, cripple a market, can it, Brian?
Right. So the cattle market is a really good case in point, especially the last 3 weeks. And then if we go back to last fall, where when things are kind of recovering, they look strong, they look bullish. Again, without some sort of pain, or it's so good you can't deny it, the human nature is to just do nothing, right? But you talk about black swan events. You know, who 3 weeks ago was talking about avian bird flu? All of a sudden it hits and the cattle market decides to get the legs cut out from under it and drop $12, $13 a hundredweight on the board, even though we're not really seeing that in the cash barns. Feeder cattle are still high. People are buying. I think the big picture concern is nobody believes, well, I shouldn't say nobody, but there's a general belief that big picture, this is going to run its course and not have long-term impact. And that ultimately the consumer, you know, every day there's something new in the news. Pretty soon you forget news from 3 weeks ago. And, oh, yeah, there was something about cattle or whatever. No, I'm going out to eat tonight. So you and I talked. The bigger concern there is just, you know, again, economically, inflation. The consumer is getting tired of, you know, hearing talk that inflation at first was transitory and then, you know, it's under control. We're going to make cuts. And then it just doesn't go away and doesn't go away and doesn't go away. And bluntly, I don't know if it will. When the government spends money like drunken sailors, I don't think that's a deflationary environment. And there's every bit of evidence that nothing is going down in value because all your government agencies now have to give pay raises to everybody. And you're seeing these votes across the board, whether it's townships, larger cities, big, big pay raises and universities raising tuition. Where's all this money going to come from? It's inflationary in nature. So that's my concern for the demand side of beef. I worry about that.
Well, once again, we're having a great conversation, some good real talk here with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing. On today's program, we're going to continue this conversation coming up here after the break, as I know got some other things I want to talk about, especially Brian brought up inflation. We're going to get to that here in just a moment. Let's look at some of the closing numbers from the session on Thursday. As things mostly lower in grains, May corn down 5.5, 428.75. December corn down 4.25, 466. May beans down 5.5, 1159.25. November beans down 5, 1164.25. May bean meal up 470 a ton, 335.60. May bean oil down 158 points, 4602. Chicago wheat, May 6.75 lower, 551.75. July down 7.25, 566.25. May Kansas City wheat down 11.25, 583.25. July down 9.25, 578.5. May spring wheat down 14.75, 637. Spring wheat for July down 13.75, 645.25. April live cattle up 117, 180.25. June up 105, 173.90. Feeder cattle April down or 90 higher, 239.17. May feeders up 162, 238.15. April hogs down 30, 91.45. May hogs up 75, 97.30. June hogs up 25 at 105.80. All right, well, we will continue our conversation with Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing. As again, the WASD numbers out for the month of April, pretty uneventful, but we're kind of talking more big picture here. We're going to talk a little more on inflation and some thoughts to maybe watch chart-wise and more in the grains and livestock with Brian. Coming up after this, back with more Market Talk on the way right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
We are talking with Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor at Total Farm Marketing, here today on Market Talk. And yeah, you brought up inflation, hot CPI numbers, consumer price index, hot PPI numbers out Thursday as well, producer price index. And just to your point, you know, thinking about this sticky inflation environment, interest rates, on-farm storage, things like that, I think that really hammers home our point here today about whether we're talking grain marketing, livestock marketing, whatever the case is, this isn't the markets of yesteryear, Brian. I think that's the point that I'd like to drive home here, and maybe you can echo some of that sentiment. Just this environment, it's not the same as it was a few years ago even.
Well, when prices are down, everybody who's involved with some, well, I don't like the word used, everybody. When the markets are down, people who are producing things, you know, take a much more, let's say, cautious look and how am I going to spend my money? And then you got the double whammy of, well, inflation's making everything more expensive. You don't know what it's going to look like. And so there's just a, you know, then that creates a real freeze. People freeze or they caution. They're not sure what to do, right? So interest rates should come down. So maybe we'll borrow money later. But everything's expensive, more expensive. You talked about, I think you said about grains. You know, when you're storing grain in the bin, and interest rates are low, it's not killing you, right? It might set a little bit of a cost. When things double, or interest rates double or more, that's a concern, right? That's money tied up, opportunity costs. In my world, we see it where a farmer might be well hedged or be in the marketplace and his account's got quite a bit of value. They're pretty quick to pull their money out and put it somewhere else, stopping interest rates, whatever, opportunity costs to put it into a CD. Or you know, maybe buy equipment before it goes up and again. So it's just different in this environment, something we're not used to seeing, haven't been used to seeing for some time. Some of us that are a little more aged, we've seen it and we've been in these cycles. It's just a different way. You know, I think everything gets tougher and tighter and people behave as such.
I love the perspective. We've been very big picture here today, outside of some of those WASD numbers. I'll kind of open this up to you here, Brian, to round it out here on the show today. As you look at any of these markets, grains or livestock, I mean, anything big standing out to you chart-wise we need to watch for? Anything really that you'd want to hammer home to producers here? Is there looking at some of this price action this week, et cetera? I mean, I'll leave this kind of open-ended for you. What are you seeing? What do you want to share, Brian?
Yeah, I think I'll go right across the board. I'm going to start with corn. So we had on March 28th, we had acreage and stocks report out. Both had a friendly tone. We evaporated roughly 400 million bushels off the top. Then in theory, with Argentina's crop maybe losing a couple million, talking 500 million bushel swing, the market has yawned at it. December corn, new crop corn, twice now up in that 480 area. Quickly can't hold it. So I know it's very early in the season. There's a lot of mindset, well, whatever the January high is, the market takes that out. You know, that may be all good and well and maybe happen. But the point of it is, when you're in a larger supply environment, I think you need to keep rallies a little bit more in perspective and reward those, especially with the amount of old crop corn that's out there. And then hope you're wrong, because if you are, you will sell more higher and you'll average up. But use the tools to defend. So in corn, continue to look for rallies, but don't get overly excited about expecting 525, 550 corn. Certainly possible, but I wouldn't look for that, you know, certainly this time of year. I think in soybeans, that is a very weak looking chart. I'm concerned that the market is probably anticipating a bigger increase in soybean acres. They didn't see it last time, probably see it in June. So stay defensive on the soybeans. And then the other thing to kind of point out is, you know, these events like this that happen, cattle, good market. And I guess what I was alluding to before, Jess, is that, you know, no pain, comfortable, never push that marketing pencil too far off the desk. Keep it there. Keep looking for opportunities. Keep having conversations. You don't want to overanalyze, but you don't want to get, quote, fat, dumb, and happy and then wonder what happened.
Well, thinking of that, if folks have questions, want to have conversations, I know they can reach out to you and the team there at Total Farm Marketing. What's the best way to reach you guys? Or I know there's multiple ways to reach you guys, Brian.
Yeah, the best, I think, is a phone call, 800-334-9779. So let's start with that. And then after the best, let's go to Brian with a Y at TotalFarmMarketing.com. Shoot me an email if you have questions. Love to spend a few minutes answering those. And thirdly, just if you have time, just take a look at our website, TotalFarmMarketing.com, and got a lot of things you can navigate through there. We have, if you have questions, we have a form fill in there. So form fill it for Brokerage Solutions and fire the question at me.
TotalFarmMarketing.com or give them that phone call, 800-334-9779. Brian Doherty, Senior Market Advisor, Total Farm Marketing. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. We'll talk to you next week.
Yes, sir, Jesse. Same to you. Thank you.
Always enjoy it. Brian Doherty there with Total Farm Marketing joining us here today on Market Talk. A great conversation once again. Really, again, put that into perspective. Don't always think about, you know, just letting your marketing go in situations like this. I kind of talked about this on yesterday's program too, and I kind of kept the theme here today with Brian. I knew he would have some good thoughts on that as well. Again, don't get complacent. Make sure you got a good, solid marketing plan. That's going to be very, very key. Again, market's pretty quiet on Thursday. Overall, soybean meal was higher along with cattle and hogs, but everything else kind of under some pressure with Kansas City, Minneapolis wheat, the downside leaders. Corn, soybeans, mainly 4 to 6 lower for the most part, just to kind of drifting with little fresh news to feed the trade. We saw crude oil down about 1%. Stocks were pretty quiet. Gold up another $27 an ounce, just seeing that as well on Thursday's afternoon trade. So another thing to watch there as gold continues to skyrocket. Other than that, though, pretty quiet trade action Thursday. We'll see what Friday brings us. That is going to do it for Market Talk here today, though. Thanks again to Brian Doherty from Total Farm Marketing for joining us, and also Tanner Emke with CoBank joining us earlier in the show, talking about that expansion of soybean crush and with some concerns about maybe overbuilding there, things like that that we have to keep in mind. Thank you as well for joining us here on Market Talk. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.